Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Velio Matos, sustainable packaging designer and the host of Package Design Unboxed. I can't believe we're kicking off season 3 with some great content around sustainability. And we're really trying to set the record straight on what sustainable packaging actually means for brands, designers, and consumers. Today we're speaking to my friend Paul Folks Adeyano. He's the founder of Circathon, founder of Sustainable Design Alliance, and an advisor at Plastic Planet, which they've just helped Dove launch their first refillable deodorant packaging. Being that Paul's an expert in circular design, we discuss what circular design means, you know, how brands are confusing it, what materials are truly sustainable, how he educates his clients in regards to sustainability. So the reason this is really important is that when we talk to packaging designers, we find that there's a ton of confusion around sustainability and circularity. And our goal at Package Design Unboxed is to help educate designers on the role that packaging plays in saving the planet. If you're enjoying these episodes, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It'd mean a great deal to me. Cool. Let's get to the show, guys. So thanks for joining us today. We've got Paul Folks Adeyano. He's the founder of Circathon. And today we want to talk about going circular. So for anybody that's not familiar with you, Paul, can you please introduce yourself?
Good afternoon or good morning or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Paul Folks Adeyano. I run a consultancy in London called Circathon. We work with generally big international clients on helping them go circular to introduce circular economy practices into their businesses.
You know, as designers, we all want to change the world, right? Designers want to make the world a better place. How did you arrive at sustainability and circularity as your focus in the way that you're going to make the world a better place?
Yeah, that's a great question. I began working in packaging design back in 1989. Many of the listeners will not know that year, but it was actually a big time in Europe, especially in Germany, around what we called then green design. It was a whole new thing coming from Germany about not having excess packaging, about using materials that could be easily recycled. So from probably 1990 to 1992, I worked alongside our creative director, visiting clients across Europe and talking about new ways of design. Jump 3 decades forward to today, and many of those, you know, issues are still the same today. We presented solutions in 1991, 1992, and brands didn't pick up on them. So 30 years later, and a long journey for me personally, we're still looking at those same briefs and those same issues today. Having said that, about probably 8 years ago, I was working at a big branding and industrial design agency called Seymour Powell, and I worked alongside a guy called Dr. Chris Sherwin, who has a PhD in sustainable design, and working with him, doing workshops, not just in Europe, but around the world, I got such a good understanding of sustainability. And then over the past few years, most of the people that work in sustainable design have kind of transitioned towards circular thinking and circular economy solutions. And I guess that's where I've decided to focus, because I'm not just working in packaging, I'm working in fashion, footwear, and materials generally. So that's why I've kind of chosen this area.
And when you're talking about circularity, what can you give us a simple explanation of what it is and what it isn't?
Yeah. So circularity is about keeping materials that have been extracted from our planet in the system so that we never throw stuff away. So imagine you have a cotton dress and you get bored after 5 years, you dye it a different color. So you have a new colored cotton dress. And 3 years later, you get it embroidered and it's got a whole kind of funky hummingbird or Quetzal design on it. Looks really cool. It's like new again. But after 11 years, it starts to fray and you don't know what to do with it. Well, you take it to textile recycling. It gets turned back into recycled cotton, and that can either become paper or a new dress. And that's a great example of circularity. It's something that which keeps going round. And only at the end of life does it get recycled. What we tend to hear a lot of brands greenwashing us with is saying, hey, we recycled 3% of all of our bottles. We're circular. That just isn't right.
Sure. Because that's a more linear economy, right? Where we're pulling materials out of the ground and then just, you know, going down the recycling path, which...
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of they're on shelf for like a week. You drink the fizzy drink. And it probably won't. I mean, if you're in the US, it won't get recycled. Let's be honest, in the US, it's never going to get recycled. In fact, you know, the recycling rates are dropping for plastics. In Europe, yeah, you may have a chance of getting that into recycling. But it will cycle once. And it probably won't be a bottle. It will probably be a piece of carpet or a fleece. And then that will last a couple of years. Maybe three, and then it goes into landfill. So it's kind of the problem of turning bottles into textiles or into carpets is that is the end. You know, they're going to go to landfill straight after that. Sure. It's not circular. Sure.
And then when we're talking about having, you know, RPETs and those materials in fashion, then you're washing that, you know, you're putting that in the laundry, you're getting microplastics, and, you know, it becomes a whole nother mess.
Yeah. And that's the problem, I think. Circularity keeps things intact so that they are not shedding pollution everywhere. So when people talk about a truly circular solution, they mean that material is staying in the system, performing a function, and, you know, definitely not shedding microfibers all over the world. So yeah, I think there are levels of circularity. We're all aiming for the kind of golden scenario of circularity, which is sometimes quite tough. But I think we're seeing more and more really good circular solutions coming to market. And to be honest, it's like everything. If a designer sees something, they can go, that's great. I can do that too with the brands I'm working on. We just need great examples in the market. Once they're there, once people are aware of them, then the floodgates open. Everyone starts to design circular.
What are some great examples that you've seen?
So I would say, you know, there's a really famous example in the UK, which is how we get our dairy. So in the morning, a guy comes with an electric vehicle and he has glass bottles full of milk or oat milk nowadays for vegans. You get those put on your doorstep very early in the morning. And when you finish, you put them back on your doorstep. The guy comes along with more, take those bottles away, and they just keep getting washed and filled for about 30 times. Eventually, the bottle's, you know, just been a little bit chipped. It gets recycled, and it comes back as a milk bottle, and it keeps going round and round. And I think in the US, this existed as well for many, many years.
Yeah, it did.
And it's just disappeared. Luckily, we kept it in the UK. It nearly got, you know, it was nearly kind of ended probably about a decade ago. But a German dairy bought the operation and kept it going. If it weren't for them, you know, we would have no refillable milk bottles, probably, apart from in a very few small areas of the country. So that's a typical refill example. Reuse, refill, refashion, three of these kind of circular words that we use all the time.
That's a great example. I mean, I'd love to see that here in the US.
And let me give you a contemporary example. So French supermarket Carrefour have linked up with an initiative called Loop Systems. And what they are doing is giving you all of your grocery either online or in store now, as in 2 weeks ago, where you can literally buy a refill pack, generally for like breakfast cereal. They're made out of metals, for water, like what's in there, Evian or Vittel, San Pellegrino. They come in glass, and they're, again, using that refill system, just going round and round and round. Those metal containers for breakfast cereal, I think they will last probably 10 to 20. I mean, they are solid.
Wow.
They will last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah.
You finish a cereal, you give it back, it gets sterilized, they put more cereal in, and it comes back to you. I mean, we use that system here in the UK. We got some hand soap, We aren't even through the first refill yet. You know, we're still going. That bottle is solid as a rock. So again, part of circularity, one of the key things, make things super solid. Don't make them fragile. The more solid they are, and again, you go, hey, they're heavy. Yeah, sure. But we're using electric vehicles, you know, powered by renewable energy. And I guess that's where Europe has a bit of an advantage over the US, because we have so much renewable electricity that we can buy here. In most countries, you've got a source.
Okay, yeah, because that's Tom Zaki's loop system, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So that was the next question is, right, when we get into those more sturdy materials, then it becomes heavier. And when we're talking about bottles or juices or, you know, any type of liquid, and we're putting it in glass, we're adding the weight, we're adding just the form factor that you can't pack as many in a truck. So what we see a lot of in the US, and I'm sure in the UK also, are these multi-layered structures, you know, for example, like a brand like Tetra Pak, which from the brand perspective, the brands start to say, well, you know, I can fit 10 truckloads in one truckload because I can collapse them. And that's my sustainable message. That is how we're being sustainable. And there's all of this messaging on, you know, these multi-layer materials are recyclable, but I've yet to see where they're recyclable.
This is the thing. I think what many of us realized working in sustainability was the big packaging companies were duping us about real recycling rates. So we know, and I think it's been very well documented, that plastics have a much lower recycling rate than they claim. No one's recycling flexible plastics because often they're multi-materials. They can't even be recycled. They can be downcycled into sports surfaces for kids that then give them, you know, endocrine disrupting chemicals that are being leached. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, we've heard all of that. But Tetra Pak, you know, we've just seen a new report published just before Christmas saying the real recycling rates were in Europe for Tetra Pak are much lower than they claim. Never mind countries that have zero Tetra Pak recycling. So I think the thing is that we need to look at countries. And I was shocked when I looked at Latin America, for example, how little recycling happens outside the big cities. You leave a big city, there is zero recycling. I mean, so if you're Tetra Pak or plastic bottles, what are you doing there? I mean, you're not going to get, even if you're paper, you're not going to get recycled, which is where the circularity really comes in. If you've got a bottle of Pepsi or Coke in a village and it's a refill, it will get back to the plant. It will get refilled because it has a value. And the whole issue is that, you know, when we do move to renewables, that heavy bottle's journey suddenly is delivered by wind or solar or hydrogen or a new way of producing energy that we're still waiting to see, because there's so much investment in new energy sources, like crazy, crazy amounts that, you know, we're going to have hydrogen airplanes in 3 years. Like, this is just ridiculous. It shouldn't happen that quickly. And I think that's why circularity is so interesting, because things should not happen this quickly. Yet when you set yourself the goal of refill, reuse, refashion, refurbish, you know, reimagine, this is all kind of the world that we're living in as sort of creative sustainability professionals. You can make things happen, and you have these solutions that keep the material in the loop forever that you just thought, seriously, Mr. Client, you're going to do that? Oh my God, you're building a factory. Oh my goodness. This just didn't happen, you know, because the pressure is so, so strong right now from everyone from Greta Thunberg through to Antonio Guterres from United Nations. It's everywhere. There's pressure on brands, and they have to react, or they will get left behind. And we're going to see this in 2021. Lots of brands who have gone, nah, you know, we'll use some kind of PCR in our packaging and everyone will be fine with us. And then suddenly their competitor goes circular and destroys them. And this is what is going to happen. 2021, 2022.
Sure. And you've got consumers on one side of the spectrum, and then you've got industry on the other side. So like what you're talking about, you know, industry, government, putting this pressure on the brands. Now, from the consumer side, when we look at the other side of the spectrum, you always hear about consumers becoming more and more aware of the impact of plastic pollution, what it has on the planet. But do you really feel it from the consumer side that that's making a difference? Because if you look around at the amount of plastic that we're generating today versus, 10 years ago, which we've almost doubled, are consumers really more aware, or are they just more confused?
They're definitely aware. And I know this because Euromonitor have done a study globally. So they're picking up big signals in Asia, in Brazil, in US, in Europe, I mean, right across the world. Around plastic and around not just plastic, but about sustainability in general. People are very concerned about the environment. Why? You turn on Netflix, YouTube, any national TV, PBS, you name it, they're talking about pollution, they're talking about environmental catastrophe, and people's countries are on fire. So one of the interesting things you say to the consumers really care, I think they only care when their country sets on fire.
Sure.
So if you look at Australia, there was no legislation, absolutely nothing around recycling. They were exporting their waste to China. China closes the doors. Their country sets on fire. Suddenly, there are bills and legislation popping up all over Australia, in Sydney, in Canberra, in the north of the country, saying no more plastic waste export. We are going to do all our own recycling. We're banning single-use plastics. This is a country that 2 years ago said, it doesn't affect us. This has happened in 24 months. And I think that's where we see the consumer pushing, but also you have to have a solution. You can't just get rid of plastics until there's an alternative. And there's a time lag. So I think you're absolutely right. We're still using more plastic. Mm-hmm. However, there are categories of plastic packaging which are seeing a big drop. So they're seeing that now. It's been happening the past 18 months. So one example, plastic bags. Mm-hmm. So there are something like just a few percent of the plastic bags that were in the UK 5 years ago, because they were basically started to be charged for. Then they started not giving them out. They just disappeared. So if you were a plastic bag manufacturer, and someone's saying to you, hey, nothing can happen, they're going, well, my factory is now empty. So what have these plastic bag guys done? They've started making non-plastic things. So we see it. It's very slow in some ways. But what I think is the big game changer is waterproof papers. So I think the big game changer is waterproof papers, which you can then use to wrap kind of not just kind of sticky substances, but you can put liquids into them. And this is the real big game changer. There's an amazing paper from Arjo Wiggins called Silvicta, and you can put salad into a bag. You can put herbs and spices. It does everything that, plastic film does. And that's just come out a few months ago, and it's a game changer.
Now, there's a paper from Dow Chemical also, which is waterproof. But what they've done is they've embedded it with latex, where then this material then becomes non-recyclable ever.
Yeah, that's not great. This is one of the problems. If you're a chemicals company like, Dow DuPont, you think like a chemicals company and you pretend the world hasn't changed. And you try and persuade the world that 30 years after you, the chemical industry, decided that recycling was going to be your answer, the world is going to agree with you. If you're a pulp manufacturer, you spent the last 20 years making pulp perform what plastics do as it tore into your market. So these guys out in Scandinavia, in France, out in Brazil, they are producing the most amazing paper stocks that can deliver really crazily good results.
Awesome.
People that I know are using them. There's a great paper for wine labels using grape waste. So again, this is kind of circularity is a big bit is using waste to keep it in the loop. So
sure.
There's a paper, I believe it's from Fason or Avery Dennison. I think it's Fason. And it's got 18% grape waste. It's called something like R grape or something like simple, so you know what it is. But you can put grass, grass cuttings from the municipal park. In Germany, they're putting grass into paper, 30, 40, 50%. There are guys using this kind of elephant grass called miscanthus, which kind of grows like wildfire, doesn't need much water, ready to harvest in a few months. All this is coming along, and it can be recycled alongside ordinary paper. So I think if you have a plastics mindset, you're going to get caught out. That's my suspicion, because everybody's very bright nowadays. When I started off in packaging 30 years ago, we didn't really think about it much. We just did it, and it was quite hard to find a good packaging designer. Now we have the internet. We have hundreds and hundreds of colleges to learn packaging design. You can go on YouTube and learn about aqueous coatings. You know, that wasn't there.
Right.
So, you know, I always say the packaging technologists are going to save the world. And I'm pretty sure I'm seeing that happen right now. I'm seeing guys doing like stuff in the lab, and you're like, we need to do this. And they're like, give us a few weeks. Before, they would have said, give us a few years. And they come back, yeah, we've tested it. It works. Oh, wow. You know, this is where we're at. And I think this is why it's so exciting right now to be working in packaging design, because literally we are going to change the world for the better. And it's not just about using great new tech and great new substances. We can go back to the 50s and do circular solutions. And designers love the past.
Right.
I mean, they love going back and looking at old ideas and making them new again. Who better to do that than a packaging designer?
No, that's awesome. I mean, I'd love to open my door and have my oat milk out front. You know, just to go back to that would be an amazing system. But I think we both tackle plastic pollution in our own ways. From a design standpoint, as a designer, it really gets difficult when you have to re-educate a client and you have to explain to them the realities of sustainability and, you know, the realities of circularity. So for you, when you consult with these brands on their path to go circular, what is your process? What's your process look like?
I guess the easiest way to get clients to understand how quickly this juggernaut of sustainability is coming at them is to show them what's already live. Literally to say, this isn't a concept. This is on shelf. Show them the packaging opened up. Slide one, opened up package. Slide two, closed up package with graphics and lots of big kind of information boxes. Slide three, here it is on shelf. Whoom, here's a whole shelf of them. And suddenly the client's going, oh my goodness. And this is really the... I found, you would do a workshop 3 years ago and most of your examples were like really cool, but they'd never been made and they weren't scalable. And I did a workshop in November with a huge $1 billion global brand. And I said, this is live. This has just launched. This is coming out next week, but here's the photographs. It's already in the press. And they were just scribbling notes like crazy. And then ideating around these things to create their own versions, leapfrogging what they were seeing. And their co-created solutions were awesome. I mean, really awesome. And that I think is the only way. You can't explain to someone in words or tell them or cajole them or persuade them. You have to show them that there's a threat to their market share. I don't think that's changed in my whole career.
Sure, sure.
It's like, there's a threat to your market share. You may want to look at this. And suddenly you get everyone's attention.
Okay, so when you're doing that and you're showing them, you know, this is where you are today and this is what's possible because this is what's going live. I would assume that you can't go from today to tomorrow in a snap, but there have to be steps, right? Because of logistics and fulfillment and lines and those types of things.
So. Yeah. And I think, again, super interesting. There was a time where we would always say, this is your launch. This is your next launch. It's like 12 months from now. And then this is your stepping stone to 3 years away, your stepping stone to 5 years away. Right now, I'm telling clients to condense their development processes or get out of the market because things are not happening that slowly. And again, bizarrely, through COVID, I've seen some of the biggest ever advances happen more quickly as people are not wasting time traveling to Singapore for a workshop or, you know, going to a works kind of marketing conference in, you know, the Bahamas. They're not doing that. They're sitting at home, putting the kids to bed, getting back on the computer going, I've cracked it. Okay, we've made a phone call to Brazil. We have a new biomaterial from there. We've got a guy in Indonesia who's got some kind of amazing pineapple waste, and we've got it. We've got our solution. Yeah, even small companies, even startups have gone, have started looking at circularity, not just in their packaging, but also in like, if they're making like hand soap and they're using coconuts, they're going, I'm using coconut oil. What happens to the rest of my coconut? You throw it away? Oh, we could do this with it. And, you know, and this has been happening during lockdown over Zoom calls with, you know, with like Madagascar, or a Zoom call with Ghana, or wherever it might be. It's amazing what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, I would say definitely that things have, through COVID, I think not just to designers, but the general public has seen how quickly we can move, right? Where you've got brands that are, you know, they make perfume or they make beer or whatever it is that they produce. And within weeks, they've retooled their lines and they're making, you know, alcohol gel, or they're making PPE, or they're, you know, it just shows that how quickly things can actually happen when you get out of your own way.
Yeah, I'll tell you something that I used to always build into programs for clients. I used to build in decision making. So I'd have my whole Gantt chart, and I used to put decision making in for clients for 2 weeks. And they would say, take it out. We can't spend that long making a decision. I said, yeah, but you do. We can't create a false timeline based on you making a decision in one day, because you take it to your boss takes it to the board, it comes back down, then you want changes and we add a new stage, and then the whole thing goes on again. I said, you know, I'm not taking out your decision-making phases. And inevitably you took out the decision. Oh yeah, we'll deal with it. Take out the decision-making phases. And, you know, you ended up literally having a one-year program of which 6 months was client decision-making.
Right.
And recently those decisions have come a lot more quickly. Not always. There are some big corporations who are still just as slow, who, you know, who just don't want to make the decision. You know, they really don't want to make decisions. And I think the whole reason for Circuithon is that we're helping businesses to kind of make better, more environmental decisions more quickly by helping them kind of train their C-suite into understanding it is what they do and why they have to do it. Because actually, there are lots of clients that want circular solutions, but very few that can get them through the C-suite. And that's actually the issue. The issue is not the technology. It's not the design capacity. It's the inability for senior managers and leadership teams to get circular decisions passed by their C-suites.
Yeah. And so talking about Circuithon, what is your perfect client, right? Because you talked about having, you know, working with a billion-dollar company. Now, there's a lot of startups out there too. So what's the sweet spot for you?
So I set out with Circuithon saying the best way to make the greatest amount of change is to work with the biggest, most polluting clients.
Sure.
Work with the people that are doing the wrong thing and help them do the right thing, and bring in consultants who can help them with their mindset, you know. So we focus very much on systemic leadership coaching. We're helping people to become good leaders and get great decisions made. But then people put these great opportunities in front of you.
Right.
So, you know, you get someone calling you saying, hey, you know, I used to work at a big company and we met when you were at your agency 10 years ago, and I remembered we were working on some sustainable stuff, and I'm now got a startup. Can we talk? And you're like, no, you know, I've got to concentrate on the big guys. But the project they're doing is so, it's like a shining light.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Like the thing that you really want to bring to market and show people what it is. So I decided I would take on some startups. And they are astonishing because they are so incredibly, they have a vision. Like, we are going to be, they're not circular. They're like pro-environment. They are super green. They're just like way ahead of what I thought was possible. So they're really saying, can we do this? I'm going, let me just call the head of the Global Association of that and just see if there's someone, you know, who's got the technical nous to help us. Yeah, there's a guy that can help. We're going to talk to him. So I end up bringing in a lot of PhDs who are either PhDs in kind of agriculture, botany, textile recycling, circular economy design to help, because the solutions are just like too much for 10 people. They need an army of big brains to kind of crack them. And the startup has got the vision to go, why does big business not do this? And you're like, I don't know. I've always worked with big brands and that's what you do. And, you know, why can't we have a factory like this? And why can't we manufacture there? And why can't we just take this and do that with it and have a zero waste operation? And you're like, actually, it's a guy in California who I think has some kind of seaweed that might help. Mm-hmm. Give me. And then you make the phone call and you find out they know some people already that you know. And off it goes. And that's the kind of fascinating thing. I find that a lot of the really interesting startups are US-based.
Wow.
You know, there's so much happening in the technology startup space in the US, in Israel, in Germany, in Switzerland, in Scandinavia. You know, you end up bobbing all over the planet, talking to people, and then going, do you have a sample that I can have? And then once you've got it in your hand, you know it can be done.
Yeah. Once you
and
see
I think
it.
That's the, yeah, you have to have the sample in your hand. And you know, when they're arriving these things, sometimes you're going, oh my goodness, the client is going to go crazy because I have it here. You know, I have this in my hand and, you know, we know what to do.
Sure.
And, you know, that is the excitement of some of these startup projects. They literally, it's like kind of being Indiana Jones. You're going around the world hunting for these hidden treasures.
For sure. Okay. So before we started recording, we were talking about some of the projects that you're working on and some of the things that are going to come online here in the next, you know, in the next few months. Can you give me a couple of examples of some of the projects that will be coming, going live?
Yeah. I think, one of the exciting things I'm working on is actually outside the packaging area. It's called the Circular Footwear Initiative. So I've been working with a number of, footwear startups, but also networking with some guys who are about to launch or who are have just launched. So one of the really fascinating things for me is just the work being done. I would name one brand because I think it's a great example of somebody very young, very ambitious, who doesn't know, he doesn't understand that things are impossible. So a young guy called Philippe Westerlund has launched a brand of sneakers called Our Choice. And these are a properly circular sneaker. So you basically get them and when they're finished, you send them back and you get a new pair back. They basically take your shoes back. They can, you know, refurb them, bring them back to life. Generally, it's the sole on a pair of shoes that goes. You know, the upper bit will last forever. I'm busy actually refurbing my own shoes at the moment. I've bought new laces. I've got a kit from Timberland that brings them back to life. Some of them have gone in the wash and they've kind of come back as new by going in the washing machine. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you don't need any more new shoes. You brought them back to life. So that for me, circular footwear, and Our Choice is live. And I know of at least two more brands launching in January, which I can't name yet. They're not live, but you know, if anybody looks at the Circular Footwear Initiative website, they'll see these brands going, appearing on our brand page, going live. I think a great example in packaging is really the whole of refill. So we know that refill is big. And refill, I think there are probably hundreds of big brands working on refill projects right now. For me, that is just testament to all the sustainability consultants out there and sustainability managers banging on about refill for the past 5 years. So I would say the interesting ones for me are the beer brands that are going back to refill. So if you look at companies like ABI, AB InBev, so Budweiser and so on, I believe that they are sort of if I'm not getting confused. They're kind of keeping refill front of mind. And I think that I'm sure I've seen a photograph of some kind of pilot of refilling. I know that the big soft drinks brands are going back to refill. So again, they say, hey, plastics are great. Don't worry about plastic. But behind the scenes, they're investing all their money in refill. And we've got machines like kind of like jukeboxes where you will have your refill cup and a machine that will spit out any combination of, you know, cola, orange drink, lemonade mixed together into your refill cup. And it's all RFID and it will all be kind of like QR codes and blockchain and, you know, you name it. That's all happening. It's not kind of some kind of mystery concept project. It's all going live. And I think that is what we need to keep our eyes out. Beverages, beer and soft drinks, waters. Danone already has a new refill project out in Bali, one of the Indonesian islands, of going back to refill instead of using plastic bottles. And we're just going to see more and more of that happening. If you look at Dye Line, so again, just keep an eye out in the Dye Line. They are involved in one of the campaigns I'm involved in is called the Plastic Planet. The Dye Line are our partners in that project, which is called plasticfree.com. And plastic free is not just about being plastic free. It's about showing people the new ways forward, the refills, the reuse, et cetera, et cetera. That website will be highlighting from spring 2021. It'll be highlighting all of these innovations. So there's so many places to look. I mean, if you open
that's excellent.
If you open your newsletter from any packaging or design magazine, it will be there.
That's great. So Paul, as we start to wrap up, I'd love to just kind of go through some questions. I'm quick fire questions, just to get your thoughts on some of these things here. What do you think should be required for any packaging to be labeled with a Mobius loop?
I think all of that material in the loop needs to stay as packaging material for a certain length of time. And what you maybe think is maybe that loop has a kind of 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, infinite kind of tag beside it, because some materials will be like a year. So a good carton paper can be recycled 9 times. Let's look at what's the life cycle of a fiber. A metal, it's going to be here forever. So we know that I nearly said aluminum. The aluminum or the aluminium that was mined in the 19th century, like 75% of it is still in our food. You know, it's in our cans, it's in our drinks cans, it's in our food packaging, it's around still. So that's kind of like, hey, how long is your shelf life? A few centuries. And I think what you suggested is quite interesting. But yeah, it's got to keep the material as either packaging or a viable kind of thing, like an automobile or, you know, like an airplane wing.
Sure. Okay. And then you've also talked about bioplastics on previous podcasts and different articles. Do you feel that bioplastics are a solution or are they creating more of a problem?
Well, I think bioplastics, rigid bioplastics on their own, are a terrible solution. So I'd never, never, ever recommend rigid bioplastics, because even some of the best composting plants can't deal with them. So it's just not a solution. What's great about bioplastics is as a coating. So if you use them as a coating to form a barrier with other materials, they are marvelous. And what's interesting is I always generally talk about biomaterials as being the next big frontier. So it's not just bioplastics. It's also things like netting that you can use to put fruit in, made out of birch wood waste that they make in Austria. So you get this great netting, which has got a lovely touch to it that you could use for other packaging. And in fact, you could use it for shoes even, that is great. So I would say bioplastics, you have to be super careful and super knowledgeable to use those safely, because they need to be in a loop that gets them composted. But biomaterials are the next generation. So the kind of PBATs, PHEVs, I don't even know half of these new ones, the PHAs, obviously, the PBSs of this world, are stunning, but often used as a kind of thin laminate or as a coating.
So when you add a bioplastic film or coating to a paper, does that then become that multi-layer issue where it cannot be recycled anymore?
It can be recycled fully, and that's the great thing. So it can be just total. I mean, again, what we really stress is, if you're going to make something that's really clever, make sure the cycling stream is really simple. So if it says can be recycled in the paper stream, most countries have a paper stream. And certainly a lot of big, you know, developed countries have a paper stream. If it can be only recycled by the world's best composting plants that are only available in three markets, forget it. You can't capture, you can't process. So that, I think, is the key thing. Must be processed locally is perhaps a phrase that we must also include in our briefs. You know, if it can't be processed local to point of sale, not even point of manufacture, what's the point? If you're making something and sending it to Asia and they can't process it, well, you know, you're doing wrong.
Sure. Excellent. How do you feel about ocean plastics?
The other day someone was saying genuine ocean plastic is so contaminated when it's in the ocean because it's attracting, obviously, all of these other quite nasty toxic substances. The amount of cleaning it needs to kind of go back into the loop is like inordinate. It's just incredible. So I wouldn't recommend any ocean plastic for, manufacturing packaging. What's more, just in the last week, within the sustainable fashion community, we've been reading about suppliers of, you know, post-consumer recycled content manufacturing virgin bottles and then recycling them in their own plants without the consumer in the middle to say this is recycled plastic.
Oh, wow.
Which they can say quite honestly, because it is recycled plastic. They've made a virgin bottle, they've shredded it, and then repelleted it.
Wow.
Because there's so much demand for recycled plastic. And I was told by one of the global procurement guys of one of these big Fortune 500 companies 3 years ago, you know, there will never be enough recycled plastic. There will never be enough recycled paper if all of this sustainability stuff goes on. And it has gone on and it's happened. So we're seeing a much, much larger output from factories of recycled plastic than what they're taking in. So I'm beginning to get incredibly suspicious. And I've heard from the US as well that there are companies in the US who are literally getting fresh bottles. So they're buying fresh bottles,
right,
grinding them up and then turning them into pellets and selling it to the fashion industry and to packaging industry as PCR. Yeah. Yeah. So, oh my goodness, there's so many crooks in the world. We just have to be so careful.
Yeah. So what's the one question that you find yourself answering from your client constantly?
Can we find this from a plant-based source? Can we find a vegan source for this? So one of the things that clients are looking for is something which is fully plant-based, fully vegan. And I've kind of struggled sometimes to even engage the manufacturers in those questions because they are still trying to remove, plastics, artificial synthetic polymers. And often the best way for them to go is to maybe look at other byproducts, you know, that may come from the animal industry or whatever, which is not great. But, you know, people have been set in a direction to go polymer free. And then it's like, oh, by the way, it needs to be plant-based, it needs to be vegan, it needs to be regenerative, it needs to come from a B Corp. Can we guarantee the ethics of the people that made it? And they're kind of going, you know, okay, just add to my list. And that's what people are asking for most, definitely plant-based and definitely kind of vegan ingredients. So there is a company called Lactips, which is making packaged milk. There are others making packaging out of crustaceans, but a lot of brands won't go near those because they're afraid of, allergies. They don't want to upset, you know, vegans and vegetarians. Those companies are making sales, but most of the people coming to me are looking for fully vegan, plant-based, bio-based solutions.
Wow. Excellent. Paul, so if anybody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best place that people can find out more about you?
I would say go to the Circuithon page on LinkedIn, which is CIRCUTHON. You can find me on Twitter, which is PANFO, PAA, N for Nut, F for Freddy, O for Orange. But yeah, Google Circuithon, look at Circular Footwear Initiative. I'm the only Paul Folks Arellano there is on Google. So you'll find me somewhere there.
That's excellent. And I'll have links in the show notes to your LinkedIn page, to your website, and anywhere else that people can find you. Paul, thank you so much. This is Paul Folks Arellano. That's been really educational. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I've said some of those things the first time as well. Didn't know they're in my head. Take care.
That was Paul Folks Arellano from Circuithon, helping us understand the world of circular packaging and sustainability. Check out the show notes for more information about how to connect with Paul. I want to thank Paul for being on, and thanks to you for listening. We'll talk soon.